Thank you, Stephanie. I'm just setting my notes up here so I can remember where I am. For the next 45 minutes, I'm going to be talking a bit about yoga nidra or eye rest yoga nidra in general. And then we'll be diving into the first of the three steps of the practice. And after that 45 minutes, there'll be a break, and then I'll be guiding you in an eye rest practice. So I'm imagining that when you signed up for this training, you probably had somebody ask you, what's eye rest yoga nidra? And I can remember so many people asking me that and not really knowing how to describe it. So I thought I'd talk about this a little bit and just the different ways that we can look at this practice. And one is it simply tools for self-care, for health, for healing? It helps to support us to be able to function optimally. So we're slowly over time knowing ourselves as this that is whole and okay. We're growing our resiliency. We're learning better and better ways to self-regulate, and ultimately to awakening to this wholeness that we are. One of the things that we're doing here is we're learning how to proactively engage with all of our content. And when I say content, I'm meaning all of our sensations, our emotions, all of our thoughts, beliefs. And I think of how learning how to meet all of this, as Stephanie was saying earlier, without trying to fix or change or coming from this place of there's something wrong here that I need to take care of. And so it can be a beautiful way to navigate and meet everything that we're doing, everything that's arising in our life. It's through this we're doing in-depth work with opposites. And we do this in many ways. We're starting simply feeling one hand, feeling the other, feeling one emotion, feel an opposite emotion, feel what is it like to take this belief to be true and the opposite belief to be true. So we're navigating these opposites over and over and over in this practice, and that the felt sense of each opposite. There's a beautiful Sanskrit phrase. If you could put up the definitions, Denny Shea, that would be great. If you're a student of yoga, you might be familiar with Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And there's a sutra in chapter 2, 30, number 33 and 34, which is this beautiful word, pratipaksha bhavana. And this is what these two sutras are saying are, when in doubt or when we're feeling disturbed by thoughts or emotions, if these things are taking us out of harmony, we can cultivate the opposite. So we do this again and again through this practice of eye rest yoga nidra. You can take that away, Denny Shea, and I'll ask you to bring it up again in another moment. Eye rest is a trauma-sensitive practice, and it's trauma-sensitive in the way that it's designed. We have the inner resource that has been added to the beginning of this practice, and it's something that we continually weave throughout the whole practice. And there's other ways, the ways we can teach this too, that make it more trauma-sensitive as well. We'll be speaking to that as we go on throughout the training. It starts as a guided meditation practice, and it might always stay that way for us, where we're going to a class or listening to a recording or guiding ourselves through the practice. But ultimately, it's a way of living. It's a practice of self-inquiry, where we're living the self-inquiry 24/7, very naturally. It doesn't have to go that way. It can be that we listen to the recordings or guide ourselves, but I really know that there's a lot of depth here, a way that we can live this practice. So if you would, in your resource guide, you would turn to page 73. And it looks like this. There's two of these maps of meditation. Page 72, it has the more of the Sanskrit. This is written in English. So use whichever one that you prefer. So what this is a path of meditation. And why I'm showing you this is because the 10 steps of Iris Yoga Nidra are embedded within this comprehensive non-dual path of meditation that draws from ancient teachings. And Stephanie is going to be going over this in depth on Saturday. You can think, if you look at it, there's these 38 steps, and I like to think of them as the periodic table of meditation elements or tattvas. And we're moving through this, it looks like there's somewhere to go here or something to do. But what I want to let you know is this is all here right now. It looks linear, but it's not. But as we move through these 10 steps of iRest, and as we're moving, it's moving us in a way through this path of meditation, it's helping us to get used to our humanity, become comfortable and kind with our being human. And it through that, it helps to release attention with being identified or fused with what's happening in the body or the emotions or the mind. So in a way, it's over time, it's freeing our attention to inquire into the nature of our essential nature. Through this process of meeting all these aspects of our being, it is a process of disidentification. It's a stepping back from, not so that we are moving away or turning away from what's present, but stepping back so we can have perspective, and stepping back in a way so that we can really turn and become really curious and interested with what's presenting itself here. The way I think of this practice, instead of being like an astronaut and going out into space, we're becoming a somanaut. We're dropping in and diving into the body and really listening to the messages that arise there. It's like over time becoming more like Teflon. So as life is happening, things land on us, we feel them deeply, but then they move through or they slide off. Instead of often in life where things are happening, where something might stick, like we're made of Velcro, it sticks and it might leave a sense of a residue or an unease. So over and over, we're becoming more familiar with our content, able to meet our content. And then through that, frees up a lot of energy. We can dive into the depths if we so choose. And I think that this really lends us well into the next steps of where we go into the iRes practice, which is into the Sankalpa itself. So if you would, in your resource guide on page 8, you can look at these. The first three steps is where we're going. And Denny Shea, can you put that those Sanskrit terms back up? Thanks. Yeah. So the Sankalpa, and here we have the word, the Sanskrit word Sankalpa. And one of the translations of this, of San, is born from the heart. Or you could also think of it something that keeps us coming home to the heart, takes us toward. And then kalpa, something that unfolds over time. So something born from the heart that unfolds over time. And the Sankalpa is composed of the heartfelt desire, the intention, the inner resource, and also these three don't have to be taught in the same order. And you might notice as we teach the practices, as we go on through the training, we might teach these in different order, not changing them because like we're bored or anything like that, but for specific reasons. But I think it's really important to note that these can be done in any order if you're sure of why you're doing it. Go ahead and you can leave that up, Denishale. I'll come back to that in a moment. But what the Sankalpa does is it focuses our attention. So it's one-pointed and available. It's a way that we can gather our energy, we can collect our energy so that we can then turn into the practice. I like to think of the Sankalpa as kind of like the compass, and it helps us over time to have a clearer sense of like, what are my values? What gives meaning to my life? Or it gives me a sense of like a deep connection with an inner resource or a clear intention that's guiding me in the direction that I'd like to go. And it's very, very natural when we're touching on what gives meaning to our lives, when we're connecting with an inner resource, or we're trying to connect with feelings of well-being, it's really natural that an opposite co-arises with that. So all the ways in which I'm not feeling well-being, all the ways in which I'm like not living my life's purpose might come rushing forward. And this is normal and natural. And this is what we call the vikalpa. And you can see here the vi is taking us away, something that pulls us out of the heart, you could say, or away from. And then the kalpa, that is something that unfolds over time. Oh, I need a sip of water. I find students come to me really disconcerted because they're in the very, very beginning parts of the practice and they're touching on the heartfelt desire or the inner resource, and all of these vikalpas come forward. But I'd like you to think of them really as guests bringing very important information. And you've probably heard of the word dharma, which can often mean like having a purpose or purpose in life. And behind dharma, a root of dharma, is the Sanskrit word ritta, which you can see here with a little dot under the R. And this ritta, I think of this as like the energy or the pulse of life that supports us in our dharma, supports us in our life's purpose, and in having a life's purpose that's in harmony with the universe. And having this life purpose is something that is a practice that we touch on every time we do I Rest Yoga Nidra, and this is the heartfelt desire. And I thought I'd touch on this first. And some people have the word heartfelt desire sort of falls flat for. So you could come up with words that work best for you. Could be like your heartfelt mission, heartfelt values, heartfelt longing, heartfelt drive. It's really, it can be personal to you, or if you're choosing to teach this, you could interview the group that you're teaching to and find the words that best resonate with them so that you can use those words. So this heartfelt desire, if you think about it, it's like, what do you want more than anything else? Maybe it's peace of mind. Maybe it's like relief from anxiety. Or you could ask yourself, what is it that provides you with a felt sense of value and meaning and purpose? As an example, maybe it's like living a life of authenticity or allowing yourself to be vulnerable. Or maybe it's like an underlying theme that you notice if you gaze back throughout your whole life, like what is the theme that's been there? As an example, if I look back through my life, I've been teaching since I was a young teenager, and it started in my dining room with Jane Fonda aerobics, teaching my friends. And then I started teaching horseback riding lessons. And then I started teaching yoga and then meditation. And it wasn't something that I planned, and actually is something that wasn't comfortable. I'm very high on the introvert side of that scale. And there was a lot of shyness. And so standing up in front of people and teaching was incredibly challenging, but there was no not doing it. Life kept saying, here's the next thing, here's the next thing. And now here we are today. So there can always be different themes. There can be multiple themes that run through our lives. The thing with this heartfelt desire is it's already here. It's like this underlying life force, prana, that's enlivening every single cell of our body. It's already present. And through these practices, we're I think of it's kind of like uncovering that which is already here. When we're accessing or trying to access the heartfelt desire, we want to utilize all of our senses. And it can be helpful to use memory, use imagination, but whatever works to give you a sense of like thinking about what is it that I really want. So what do you see? Are there sounds? You know, what do you feel in your body? And in the beginning, it might be that there's many times where you're finding, like you're trying them on. Like, how are we going to know what gives meaning or purpose to our lives? Or how are we going to know what is the most important thing if we don't try different things on, right? So I think of it, it's like a sweater. It's like, put one on, check it out. How does it fit? Is it comfortable? Is it uncomfortable? And it's so helpful in the beginning too, to start maybe with something really simple. Like maybe my heartfelt desire is to feel peace of mind. So if I just want to try that on, then I really imagine it and feel it as I'm living it. Like, what is it like to wake up that way? How do I live my life when I feel like my heartfelt desire or longing has been fulfilled? So I really tune into that peace of mind. What does that feel like? How does the body respond when I'm imagining myself living that way? And if imagery doesn't work with you, just feeling like, what is it like now that the longing's fulfilled? And when we turn into the feeling, we're really tuning into like the sense of the felt sense of it as best we can. And then see if we can get a word that best describes it. Or maybe there's a sentence. And this is really important. We want to phrase it in the present tense. So I wouldn't say something like, may I have peace of mind? I might say instead, my mind is peaceful. Peace of mind is here. It's however you want to phrase that. And I think of this as like a key, so that the next time I'm meaning to call this forward, I've got the key of the word or the phrase that helps to make it more concrete. And then I can drop back in and experiment with feeling it. And it's really important too, as we feel this, just to notice, how does it fit? Does it work? Yes, no. And there might be time where we have to continually try things on until we find what we land on. I think maybe the first year or so, I kept trying things, and eventually there was more of like like an umbrella one that sort of encompassed all the aspects of my life. There is in your manual, and you don't need to look for it now, I just like to point it out, there's a practice in the manual in chapter 2 on the pages 3 and 4 called the view. And it's a wonderful practice of just sort of sitting back. It's almost like kind of like writing your eulogy and sitting back and imagining how would you have wanted to live your life? What would your friends say about how you lived your life, your family? So it's a beautiful exercise that helps to find or distill down what this heartfelt desire or longing might be. And I know I have a moment here. One other thing I wanted to say about this was, I'd like to think, you could think of it as like a compass, this heartfelt desire. It's sort of like helping us navigate, or like a star, if you are orienting and navigating by starlight, finding that North Star and letting it kind of guide you through our lives. So in this way, we're touching on this important question. Often, there's no surprises in midlife. We're really taking the time to find out and live from what feels important. You know, I'd love to open it up if there's any questions about this heartfelt desire. And Denny Shea, you could take that down. Yeah. Okay. So if there's no questions about this, then I'd like to jump into the next piece. And I'm going to touch on the intention, because I think that this, the heartfelt desire and the intention really go hand in hand. And the intention supports the realization of the heartfelt desire. The intention could be long-term. It could be a year, a couple years. It could be short-term. It could be like a month, a couple weeks, or it could be like very like immediate, like for the specific practice, like maybe the practice that we do this evening. We can ask ourselves at the beginning, like, why am I here? What is calling me to meditation? So with the intention, in a way, like as an example, if my heartfelt desire was something like, I receive clear inner guidance. My intention, there could be multitudes of intentions that would support that heartfelt desire of, I receive clear inner guidance. So maybe an intention might be like a long-term one, might be to incorporate regular periods of meditation in my life so that I can actually sit and listen and wait for that guidance to show up. Or it might be as I'm beginning my IRS practice and I state my heartfelt desire, I receive clear inner guidance. Maybe a belief pops up about that. Maybe a belief, something like, I don't trust myself, comes up. And that would be the vikalpa coming up. And that might be, okay, I'm making my intention for this practice to meet that belief. I don't trust myself. Or it might be that my intention that supports this heartfelt desire is something like, I'm open and curious and kind with whatever arises in my practice or in my day. And in that way, and in a more subtle way, it is supporting that heartfelt desire. Sometimes I've found students have come to me and said that their heartfelt desire and their intention were the same. That's okay. And I think it's really important if we land on an intention, say for our practice, any intention really, that we drop in and feel and check it out and make sure that like every single cell in your body is in agreement with the intention that you're making. I think I noticed in myself, my first few years of doing this practice was I was kind of like poking myself with a sharp stick, finding the intention that I thought I should have versus really tuning in and finding out what intention needs to be here. So you can check it out with your body. That being said, if we're making an intention for say, like a long-term intention, maybe for the next year, and I'm saying, I'm going to meditate every day for half an hour, I can tell you right now that in when I was first starting this, that would not have happened. And then I would be breaking a vow to myself, which I think we need to take these intentions very, very seriously. So how can I make an intention for out in my daily life that I can actually complete? So maybe in the beginning I was like, okay, I'll meditate twice a week for 10 minutes, or I'll do an eye rest recording twice a week. And then it felt like then more wanted to happen and more wanted to happen. And of course, sometimes we don't know. We make an intention and then we realize it's an intention that it's too much. And then we just have to go, okay, we have to reevaluate, change that intention so that I can not, so I can be safe with myself, so that all these aspects of my being trust me and that I can follow through with what I say I'm going to do. Take the vow seriously. So I'd love to open it up if there's any questions now in regards to that heartfelt desire or the intention. You can raise your hand and
have some questions here, Jennifer, that we've noted. I can bring them forward.
Please.
There was one about, do you find heartfelt desires change, or do people keep the same one but alter their intentions around it?
I think that's a great question. You know, it's my experience that they change. And in the beginning, it's that trying them on. See if they fit. Try one for a while. Maybe it is the one, but maybe it falls flat after a while. And then we try another one on. Yeah. Some people do land on one and that's it. But hasn't been the case for me and a lot of the people that I talk to. Yeah.
And then is there any length of time you play in Sankalpa?
Any length of time? Well, today we're going to do a really long one. It's our first eye rest together. Really want to take a nice, long, leisurely Sankalpa. So I'll talk more about this when we get to the practice, but I'm going to highlight the Sankalpa today, and especially the inner resource part of the Sankalpa. And then I'm low lighting the rest. I'm still touching on them. We're noting emotions, we're noting thoughts or images, but then we're really highlighting that sense of Sankalpa. Hope that answers that question. Anything else, Denny Shay?
Not on this end, unless a hand wants to raise. Oh, Rita. I see Rita's waving, so I'm going to spotlight Rita along with you. Right.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Rita.
Everyone, lovely to be here. I noticed I was listening to myself as you went through this, and I just am loving it. My body is loving this, but I'm also having with the heart's desire, there's always been a block in me. And I don't know if it's just something that I haven't stayed with.
Mm.
And I'm noticing that that the opposite, like this stuckness, this not being able to have access to even knowing what that is. Something like I can't, there's a block, yeah. there's, I just, you know, that whole thing, because yeah. anyways, so I wondered if you could speak.
Yes, yes. It's very, very common, Rita, that this comes up. And, you know, we can meet the stuckness in our practice, and we can meet the beliefs we have about it. One of the things I like to ask people is, what would it feel like if you did know? Maybe you don't need to know. What would it feel like if you did? And what if the answer is arising in a way that doesn't make sense to the mind? So the answer could be a sensation in the body. It could be an emotion. It might be an image. It could even be a sound, piece of music. The mind doesn't always understand the answer to the question, but as we sit with it over time, it does become clearer and clearer what it is. One other thing that's coming to my mind is that sometimes, like for myself in the beginning, I had to start small. Like I call it like peeling the onion. Like, okay, what do I want right now? More than anything in the world, I want a latte. That's it. Now I feel it. What does it feel like to have that desire fulfilled? And I really live it. Oh, you know, the deliciousness, the warmth, the cozy. And then it's like, okay, I have this now. Now what do I want? Oh, I really love to have like a loving partner, or I'd like, you know, or this kind of a job, or I'd like to read that book. And then I imagine it, and I feel it, and I feel it, and I feel it. And really tune into the felt sense of it. And it's kind of like, okay, now I've read the book that I'm really interested in. Okay, now what do I want? And just let everything you've ever desired to come forward. And it doesn't need to be I'm blanking on the word now, but it doesn't have to be grand. It can be so ordinary and simple. And with time, it's like, oh, okay, now I have the loving partner that I want. Now what do I want? Oh, I would like this or that, or somewhere where I feel secure to live, or, you know, and finding, or, and then it maybe it morphs into, oh, I'm my heartfelt desire is to feel a sense of ease in me. That's it. Does that help?
Well, I think when you said the last thing, just to feel an ease, you know, it almost seems like it needs to start out small, maybe, and or, you know, because it's the access to the belief, the opposite of getting what I want, or mm-hmm. imagining what if I imagine what I want, it feels like, well, but it's never going to happen because it hasn't, or.
Yeah. And that's true. You know, it might not happen, but what does it feel like if it did? And then it's like, so many times I think, oh, I've had this wish granted to me now. And then it's, I don't know. It's like the first time, like I remember my husband, he said I could share stories about him. He's like, I have my heartfelt desire is having a kayak. And then he got one. And he's like, well, that didn't work. You know, I still, you know, now there's more. But what is the essence of all of that? Like, if I want like a secure, safe place to live, that might not be able to happen. But what I can do is I can feel that in me, right? It becomes kind of an umbrella. My heartfelt longing is a sense of ease or security within myself.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. That's it. There's, for me, for sure, there is a constant sense of insecurity in my physiology. Mm. I don't feel safe. I don't worry about safety. I have nothing to be worried about, but the felt sense in my body is definitely not, because I do not feel safe.
Yeah.
So.
So I hope this gives you some angles to look at this from, and I'd love to hear how it goes.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm going to move on just because we're getting short on time, and there's one other very important thing I'd like to cover. And this is the inner resource. Very, very, very important part here. And with the inner resource, again, find your word that works best for you. It could be like an inner sanctuary, a refuge, a lifeboat, home base. Find what works for you. Or if you choose to teach this, you know, talk with the population that you teach and find the words that work best for them so you can use them when you teach. But this inner resource is also part of what makes IREST trauma sensitive. It's woven throughout the practice, within and around it. And then it really is like a felt sense, as best we can find, of any kind of well-being. And I want to say, you know, there's a large continuum of what well-being is. Like on one end, well-being might be neutrality, or it could be really basic. It's like, look, there's enough air to breathe right now. My body's functioning well enough to be sitting here in this class right now. I'm not running from a predator. So at this really, really basic sense, I'm okay. Basic, neutral, okay. The other end might be bliss. And then we could be anywhere in between. And so what we're pulling for is like, well, what's accessible right now? And so I as you hear me say well-being, no, that it's the whole gamut of well-being. When we're accessing it, we can use a memory. We could use our imagination. For many years, I had this really elaborate place that I went to in my mind where there were wise, like human beings there. There were like wise animals that I could talk to, and there was all the beauty of nature, and I felt very secure. But this inner resource can also be this felt sense of being, this presence, like as Stephanie was talking of, like maybe remembering a moment where you had completed all your tasks, where you're just resting back and feeling a sense of ease. You know, that could be the inner resource as well. It's if you are using memory or imagination to access the inner resource, it's really important to run the experiment of dropping the images and tuning into how those images make you feel, because it's the images aren't the inner resource. The feeling you get from them, that's the inner resource. But we might need to use the images again and again and again, because I think I've read, I might have the numbers wrong, but like the average human has something like 60 to 70 thoughts a minute. So we're getting distracted again and again and again. And through these practices, we are growing our ability to focus our attention for longer and longer periods, so we could stay in our inner resource for longer and longer periods. But we really want to be able to use the image, but tune back in, get really curious about how does the body respond to that image? Feel that. And we might need to come back to it 60 or 70 times in 1 minute. But know that every time that you sort of fall out of that inner resource, when you come back to it, when you call it back, you're creating a stronger neural pathway. So these feelings of well-being will become more and more available as you spend time with them. And eventually they become like underlying, like always here, unbreakable. And, you know, I didn't believe this at first, and I heard Richard Miller talking about it for years and years. And I was like, Yeah, right. That's not my experience of life. But I kept practicing and kept practicing. And 1 year, for a couple years, I was having a really rough go about 15 years ago with anxiety and panic attacks. And I was at one of the iRest retreats, and it was totally silent, like 60, 70 people in the room. And just out of the blue, as they were happening for me, a panic attack started. And it felt so awful that I wished I would pass out so that I didn't have to experience it. And then as soon as I had that thought, a feeling of well-being came up. And it was so apparent. And I started laughing out loud in this whole silent meditation group, because I was like, he's right. Here I am feeling so uncomfortable. And then here's this inner resource coming along and remembering me. It's like a trapeze, the net under the trapeze. So it's over time, it becomes more and more like underlying here always, and more just this felt sense of well-being as coming forward as a quality of like aliveness or presence, essential nature. I love it when that stuff happens, because really it's like Stephanie was saying earlier, it's like we need the firsthand experience. We don't want to, you know, I was hoping he was right when he said it would come along. But I didn't really believe it until it showed up. I think I will stop with that. There's a couple other things I wanted to say. And then if we have a minute or two for questions, we can do that before our break. One thing I wanted to talk about is something we say a lot in iRest, which is the word welcoming. Like we're welcoming all the guests that are showing up in the form of sensation, emotion, cognitions, maybe even guests as far as like smells and tastes and things that are coming in through our ears and all of that, all these guests coming in. And I find that a lot of people that I talk to have a hard time with welcoming. It's like, no, what's happening right now in life is so hard. I just can't get there. With this idea of like embracing it and welcoming it and saying, come on in, all you uncomfortable guests. And so for me and other people, it can be really helpful to find again the words that work for you. One of the words that I really like is acknowledging. It's like I can acknowledge what's here. I can be with what's here. I can inquire into what's here. I can respond to it. Because isn't it, if we're acknowledging, we're acknowledging the truth of what's happening in the moment. That's it. And it's like, we're not trying to fix it or change it or alter it anyway. Because we know what happens when you fight with reality, right? You lose. And so can we find these ways or find words that work for us so that we can welcome in all these guests or acknowledge or be with them just as they are? And all of these practices that we're doing are pointing us back towards this sense of this, that we are as this non-separate wholeness, that everything that's arising, sensations, emotions, you know, the list of everything that can arise, everything is arising from or through this underlying mystery, this mystery that has given rise to the entire universe. And I think that's what makes this like that heart, this a heart-centered practice that we're doing here. Not trying to fix or change, just learning how to be with life just as it is. And this doesn't mean that we lay down and let the steamroller go over us. But what it means is when we're able to be with, we're much more able to feel or sense what the appropriate response needs to be in the world. So realizing it is exactly 5 p.m. So I'd love for you to be able to have your break. If there are any questions, maybe there's something that we can touch on later. We're going to take a 15-minute break. And then when we come back, I'm going to talk for a little bit. And then we'll be going into, I'll be guiding you through an iRest practice. So have what you need to be comfortable for that practice nearby. All right. Have a good break.